Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner, founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. And in this program, you're going to meet a guy who plugged a video camera into his computer and created one of the top internet TV shows. And then he parlayed it into appearances on major TV shows. And more importantly for Mixergy, he parlayed it into ownership stakes in internet companies. His name is Gary Vaynerchuk, and he is the founder of Wine Library TV. Wine Library is a show about wine. And in this program, you're going to get to meet him and get to find out how he built that program. You're going to find out how he got over 90,000 viewers a day now. You're also going to find out how he got that breakthrough by getting on Conan O'Brien, the story behind the story of how he got on there. You're going to find out how he parlayed his success and his fame into ownership stakes in internet companies. And you're going to find out about his opinions about doing what you're good at. And by the way, to be honest with you, I don't believe that I am exceptionally talented when it comes to video, and you're going to see in this interview a few of my shakier moments, but there's a reason why I do it. When I was building my internet company, guys like Napoleon Hill, here's a book, and guys like Forbes, who they brought stories of successful entrepreneurs, successful business people to me, and I studied them, and that's what helped me grow. And doing this interview, bringing successful entrepreneurs and stories of successes to you is my way of paying it forward. And that's why I do it. Video happens to be the medium that people reacted to the best. And even though I don't feel an especial comfort in front of the video camera, I feel an obligation to do this well and to do it as well as I can. And that's why I'm here. And that's why I'm doing these videos. And that's what I'm hoping you'll get out of it, that you'll watch some of the most successful entrepreneurs out there as they build their businesses and learn from them and use it to build your company. Here's my interview with Gary Vaynerchuk. Take me back to February 2006 when you decided to launch Wine Library TV. What was your vision for it back then?
Yes, I will. In mid-2005, my developers, Eric Kastner and John Casamatis of Wine Library at Wine Library, really started taking a lot of lunch breaks with Zay Frank and Amanda Condon and Rocket Boom. And though, when I first saw Zay's show, it was just very obvious to me that internet video content was going to work. And I was passionate about wine, and I was going to do it. And it was going to be big because I am badass, and I really give a crap. And I was going to work so hard, so much harder than anybody else, that there was no chance that I wouldn't have unanimous victory over the world.
What did unanimous victory over the world mean for you? Did it mean building a big website that was profitable? Did it mean a brand? Did it mean something else? What did it mean?
That's a great question. It meant being super happy every day. I knew I was doing something new. I knew that it would be looked back on as legacy. It's nice to be known as one of the early substantial video bloggers. So I was just excited about the opportunity of being part of something new, crushing it, working hard, changing people's minds about wine. It was very exciting for me. I wanted to expand, you know, the wine world. You know how fun it is to me that there's so many people that are watching right now that didn't like wine prior to my show? That's badass. That's exciting. And I also was excited to use the tools to promote the show. At the time, Facebook was a college play, so I was scared to go into Facebook and seem like the creepy old guy peddling alcohol. So I didn't really leverage Facebook. Twitter was really, it was alive, but nobody knew it. I got involved a little bit later that year in 06. What really was interesting to me was getting involved with, you know, leaving comments on blogs and going into forums and all the little subtle things that I needed to do in my hustle. And most of all, answering every email as I started to gain a small fan base.
What's the first thing that you did after you bought a camera? So you bought a camera.
I sent a stock boy to Best Buy because I was so hungry to get going right away. He came back. Eric Kastner, my lead developer, sat down, turned it on. I grabbed three bottles of high-end California wine and just started taping a show. And that was it. Everybody can go back and watch episode one. There's what you saw, that what happened. I posted it after we made a design for it. I think Colin Deborah from Vidler did the design. I think he ripped me off. And put it on WordPress, put it out, and started emailing some people that I knew were into wine that were customers, and went into some wine forums and said, hey, I'm trying to have to do a new show. Who's got ideas for topics that are interesting to them? And just started hustling.
I saw that first show, and you said that that you were emailing people a lot at the time, and you thought that video might be a new way to interact with them without flooding their inbox. And now you're saying that you used email to get people to watch your first show. I'm wondering, how big was your mailing list at the time?
There was about 10,000 active people on Wine Library's, you know, mailing list at the time. But a lot of them weren't the demo that was going to be like, yeah, that online videos, that's the good stuff. And I wasn't able to attract a whole lot of attention from that. I think where I really got more traction was from going into blogs, leaving comments, and just because I was always part of some wine forums, that helped. And I had a big store at the time already, so people knew who I was in the industry. So as the chatter started getting out there in like classic old world word of mouth, it started getting out there to people, and then people started writing articles about it. And just I built a forum, all these small little details that all added up to, you know. And then I started making big commitments, right? Like in 07, I really turned on the floodgates. Me and AJ went out to do a Technorati party, you know. Just I emailed Technorati, they were a hot company at the time, and I said, do you want me to come and do a wine tasting for your staff? Who's going to say no to that, right? So just made a lot of commitments that way.
Do you remember how many people saw your first video?
What the view count was after mm-hmm. like the first day or two, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
70?
70. So you put the video up, you emailed about 10,000 people, you told people.
I didn't email people until probably the fourth or fifth episode.
Why?
So that I think that got me about 400, 500 views. There was still a lot of people not really hungry to watch online video at the time, especially my 55-year-old Bordeaux buying demo.
Okay, so the people on your mailing list weren't helping you grow the forums you mentioned earlier. How much traffic were you getting from that?
My actual forum or different forums like the Spectator and Parker forum?
Different forums.
Yeah, I don't even know. Here's something funny, Andrew, I knew you were going to give a good interview. I knew you were pumped and ready to bang this out and make one of the great videos of all time, so good job by you. Here's something really interesting about me, and I think it's legitimately one of the more substantial secret sauces elements of my success. My metric pay attention to skills is awful. I look at my stats. I like, you know, Get Clicky, big shout out to them because it has spyware, so it's fun to like watch the, it's not spyware, excuse me, spy feel. I almost ruined Get Clicky's business. Thank God AJ was here to make a weird face. They have a spy function so you can just watch people coming onto the server, so it's real, it's moving, it's fun to watch. But the fact of the matter is that I don't make decisions on stats. I never have. I don't pay a lot of attention to them. And a lot of the questions on this stuff, I'm not going to know exactly because it was head down. It wasn't about what I was going to do right that minute, right? It's about what I knew that was going to do to allow me to do what I'm going to do 25 years from now. I knew I would become a good show because I know what I'm talking about. I know that I'm funny-ish and I've got a personality that's going to be love or hate, which works, and all that kind of stuff. And I knew I was going to work hard. So the stats early on were irrelevant. I wasn't looking to monetize. So they were relevant for that reason. And then other than that, they were completely irrelevant. I was much more worried about answering my emails and leaving comments in my forums and just being part of my community than anything else, even though my small community. And going and hitting up bloggers and saying, hey, will you talk about my show? What can I do? Or can I buy an ad? For $15 or so. I mean, it was just pure good old fashioned hustle. And I think way too many people worry about those small details early on, especially. I think those details are more important much later on in the process, probably about the time you're just about to sell it to a bigger company. Because if you're an entrepreneur, those little details are irrelevant.
Okay, but here's the thing. A lot of people are putting video online right now or putting any kind of content online. And as soon as it hits the internet, it seems to disappear. Nobody watches it.
Because there's a lot of crap out there. There's a lot, I mean, not crap isn't bad stuff. There's just a lot of stuff being put out there, right?
Mm-hmm. So, but your stuff early on, and I've heard you say this, so I don't think I'm being insulting, but your stuff early on wasn't as great as it is today. It was you sitting at a desk with the wall just like you have behind you and sampling wine. It got better and better, but it got, what am I trying to say here? Look at, I'm getting all tongue-tied around you, Gary.
I have that effect on people. Ladies.
All right, you put your stuff out there. What I'm trying to get at is you put your stuff out there. How do people start watching? It's not enough that it's good. It's not enough that you're pouring your heart into it, because I see people pouring their heart into it all the time online. So that's why I want to understand that you emailed your mailing list, that you went to forums.
I think a couple things. I think tenacity and listen, honestly, I think people bullshit, Andrew. I don't think people put in 12 hours a day in the community. I don't think people spent, I mean, AJ ad nausea was upset with me at the fit. Like, when, I mean, do you know how much email I did, Andrew, and like how much it dictated my life and how much time it took? Like, enormous, like just crazy amounts. Like, me and AJ would take a flight to San Francisco, and we're like bros and we love each other, and it was a headset. And, you know, the whole time, because if I didn't clear it up on that flight, it was going to get ugly, you know? So I just cared a lot more, first of all. Second of all, listen, and this is very, you know, silly to say and uncomfortable, but I have charisma. I have star power. I mean, I don't know if I have a lot of it, but I have enough to make it not just normal, right? And so that doesn't hurt, and not everybody has that. But even more than those two things, I knew what I was talking about. And I think when you really know your content, like, I knew to talk about 2005 Bordeaux 9 months before it became a hot topic, because I know what the hell is going on. And that gives me credibility, because everybody was watching back then 3 years ago, and I'm like, buy 2005 Bordeaux. Don't buy it from me. Just buy it. I'm not doing this because I don't want to sell you any 05 Bordeaux. Buy it. Those people that did and made 200, 300, 900% returns on their investment, they won.
Shit.
Need some water?
Fucking A. All right, but you didn't... So... Man, I'm all over the place. Olivia, what's going on with me here? I think, thank you, Olivia. Holy shit, I'm actually getting all nervous here. Thank you. All right, were you just taking a gamble that answering all those emails, that posting comments would help you? Why did you know that doing all that was going to be helpful?
Because in the 1930s, during the Great Depression, people worked hard to build businesses. We are such a thin-skinned society right now and think everything happens in 1 second, and it's not our fault. We tweet something out and something happens. Everything is so fast now, but let me tell you something and promise you something. No businesses are built fast. Nothing of real substance and of real value. Now, can you knock something out of the park and come up with a good idea? Sure, you can, but you still had to put time in. You know, everything that's an overnight success is a 20-year process. You know, Ev and Biz and Jack and those guys and Mark Zucks. And Zucks was coding when he was 7. Didn't happen overnight. Go ahead.
But he wasn't emailing every single person and saying hi to them. He wasn't going out and posting comments on message boards.
He was creating something much better than what I was creating. I mean, he won because he made a better and more scalable product. I did not have a scalable, better product. I had a very small niche wine show, and the only way I was going to win was to really work my face off every minute, and I was willing to put in that time and effort because I knew, because I have this skill of seeing what I think is coming up aboard, and I'm not a massive visionary, but I can taste things when I see them, knowing that they're important. I did launch winelibrary.com in 97. Not that that's the earliest, but from East Coast Wine Liquor Store in New Jersey, I wasn't in San Fran. You know, I just knew that the hard work would pay off, because I knew if nothing else, Andrew, whether I continued to do that show or something else, I was making personal connections, and people and relationships are the single most valuable thing in business and in life. And I'm always willing to put in as much effort as possible. It's so funny, I go to these conferences and, you know, everybody wants to say hi and all that stuff. And I'm usually the first person to roll up on somebody and just say hi. I'm not scared of it. I like the human interaction. So that plays into a big advantage for me. And so I'm just not scared as other people are, because I know it's a marathon. My mindset's a marathon, but my effort is like a sprint, you know?
How does something like this scale? I keep hearing that when it comes to internet companies, that you've got to build something that scales. Talking to every single fan, how does it scale? How do you grow it?
a lot of different ways. It scales in the fact that, you know, people realize you're not full of shit and you're a good person, and more people that know that, the better you're going to be, period, end of story. It scales when I have access to hundreds and thousands of very important entrepreneurs and tastemakers, that if I have a business idea that I can move the needle because I built credibility in being somebody who was legit and built businesses. Don't forget, for all the people that are running around saying they're social media experts or this, that, and the other thing, you know, I built a $60 million company and I built other entrepreneurial ventures that have value. I know what, I'm a businessman. And so the scalability of it for me was the relationship and the, by the way, the scalability for me was the fact that Steve in Utah really was pumped that I answered him and really was thrilled that I gave a crap, and it really meant something to him. And as a human being, that means a lot to me. It's not about dollars and cents and users always. To me, of course, I'm very entrepreneurial and for the hustle and want to buy the Jets. So I have my mindset on those things. But when I'm 94 and I'm laying in bed, I have a very substantial feeling that I'm not going to care that I pulled off buying the Jets. I'm going to lay there and be like, holy crap, I know a lot of people, and a lot of people were touched by me, and I was touched by a lot of people, and that's what the game of life's all about. And so I want to play it the most proper way, and that's how I play it.
At what point did you know that you were hitting it online, that you had something big?
I don't know. Something that I thought I had something big the day before I started it. I would have never done it if I didn't think it was that big. As a matter of fact, it's not nowhere close to as big as I thought it could be. And the reason that is because I get spread into other interests. I need to launch a t-shirt site with my brother. I need to create a consultancy company. I need to write books. I just need that constant juggling that makes somebody like me happy. If I put every ounce of energy into Wine Library TV, every allocated ounce, the show would be much, 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 much bigger by now.
So why don't you? Because you just can't do it.
Because I just can't do it. Because I put in every piece of heart and soul into that show. And listen, with all the other things that are going on with me, and many people are very aware of how many different dynamics I have going on these days, I still pump that show out every day. You know, where a lot of, you know, when I'm getting offered tens of thousands of dollars to do a television show for what I do, but instead I do this. I mean, there's a lot of people who I know that would not continue to do what I do, but I do it because I respect the fans being there for me. I pump out good wine content. I'm passionate about wine, and I'm a unique individual. I'm very contradiction. I want scale, and I want to build billion-dollar businesses, but I have no problem building 45-cent businesses and meeting every person on earth.
How big
as long
was
as I'm
it?
Happy.
How big was it for you to be on Conan O'Brien?
Huge. Huge. It was big because when I was standing behind that curtain about to go out on television, there was two things running through my mind. Number one, I'm one of the first internet celebrities to be on national television on this scale, not a morning show. So don't screw this up for everybody else. And much more important than that was my parents came to this country with no money. Zero. In 1978, they couldn't speak English. And the fact that they're about to watch their son go out on this big of a platform has to be insane for them. What a sense of accomplishment and love. And I just had this overwhelming gratitude and love for my parents and just wanted to make them proud, which is really what drives me every day.
What happened to this show? What happened to Wine Library TV after O'Brien?
A lot of things happened right before it. I was tweeting from the green room. A lot of people picked up on it. People like Frank Gruber, and John Gruber from Daring Fireball put up a link. He's got a lot of juice. That sent a lot of eyeballs. I got a lot of attention. There was hundreds of blog posts about it, tons of tweets. When Twitter was really small and kind of like closed circuit, so all 100,000 people knew about it kind of thing. And the embed codes on different blogs and platforms after that was what was really significant. The fact that we live in this day and age where an appearance on Fallon or Conan for me extends long after me being on there or the people that saw it is very big. That was definitely a very crucial moment in my career because it was massive exposure and it was a lot of news. I mean, this was, you know, it was a big deal. This was August of 07, so it was a very different world. And so it was exciting.
How'd you get on there?
New York Magazine wrote an article about my show because the guy who wrote the article was a maniac and thought it was fabulous. I have no idea why I just used the word fabulous. I apologize. And after that article, Joel Stein, the great writer at the LA Times and Time Magazine, read it because he's from Jersey. Ironically, Edison, New Jersey, where I'm from. Ironically, I would have went to the same high school as him if we didn't move to Hunterdon County. He thought it was interesting, watched shows, thought I was incredible, called me, did an interview, and then I got a Time Magazine article about me. That was a big deal. You know, he really painted a great picture of who I was. You know, that led to several producers at Conan reading that article in Time, going online, watching what I did, thought I had it, sent an email to Vidler, not even me, to Vidler, because they didn't know how to get to me, because that was my platform. Thank God Rob Sandy, the CEO, sent me the email and didn't think it was like a joke, because I would have thought it was a joke. And I called them, and basically I blew them away in the phone call because they wanted to see if I was legit. And the first time I ever went on television was the Conan O'Brien show.
So there wasn't a PR agent who got you on Conan. It was just those articles. And I saw that there have been a ton of articles written up about you. Was there a PR person who got you in those articles?
I hired a PR person in January of 2008. Mm-hmm. So prior, no. Forward, maybe. I mean, a lot of stuff comes to me and I just pass it to the PR person. The world's changing. It's a mix, but the world we live in today, I don't think PR people, they've got to transform themselves. The traditional PR person has to find more value to bring to the table than they did traditionally.
So what did this PR person bring to the table that was different?
What I loved about her was that she was very ingrained in the food world. She had repped Rachel Ray for 5 years, and I wanted access to the Today Show and Gourmet Magazine and those things, and so I paid for access.
And this was a year into launching Wine Library TV, you paid for access.
Two years. Because February of 2006, this is now February. She actually started February 1, 2008.
I see. So were you doing any promotion before then? Were you getting on the phone to magazines? Were you getting on the phone to none of that?
None of that. But I could have. I just felt like that was easy for me. That's something I know, right? Like, I could have turned that switch on at any time. I felt it was important for me to become relevant in the web world, in the tech space, and the people that used new technologies. It was clear to me, things like Dig and StumbleUpon and Technorati at the time and Facebook and YouTube and all these things, you know, waxy.org, and, you know, all these, you know, Jason Kaki's blog, all these things were important, you know, Blogger, and, you know, it was very obvious to me that that was the world, that's where I wanted to be, and that's where I was gonna spend every piece of my energy, because getting CNN and Fox and Today Show was gonna be easy once I had this thing in place.
Matt Mikowicz.
I still feel that today, by the way.
Sorry?
I still feel that today for everybody. I think being relevant in this world, whatever that is definitely the most important thing.
Hey, listen, I earlier in the interview, I did something dorky and I admitted that I feel nervous having all these people watching. I'm getting more tweets than anything else. And this is just an internet conversation that you and I are having. Honestly, when you go on Conan for the first time, and it's important, you know that the future people who are potentially going to ask you for an interview are all going to be watching it. What kind of nerves are going through your system? What are you feeling?
I'm in the same mental place as I was in senior year of high school before playing intramural floor hockey. The one of enormous confidence, but I'm willing to throw up out of excitement. My nerves don't come into play because I'm not nervous in that environment. You put on the lights, that's where I shine. That's my game, that's my domain. I want the pressure. AJ and I played doubles tennis the other day, my best serving match when we were down 5-4. We played Dr. Oz in basketball at his house. Great guy, by the way, big shout out to Dr. Oz. We got our faces beat in because it was Dr. Oz and a 6'10" guy that's starting center at BC at Boston College. Great guy, John Oates, and they were slaughtering us. The only game we flip cammed, AJ and I won. So, you know, I've got a little primetime player in me. You know, a lot of times I'm about to take the stage at a keynote and I'm like, crap, I don't want to talk about the same stuff anymore. It's not going to be good. And then I'll give a really good talk and everybody will talk about it. And I'll be like, you know, so I'm into it. You know, I'm into the lights, the cameras, the action, the attention. If I wasn't, I would definitely not be doing the kind of things I do. I'm very willing to put myself out there, mainly because I really respect other human beings. Meaning, if they don't like me, or if they think I'm stupid, or they think I'm too brash, or self-promoter, or full of shit, or whatever they are, I respect them to no end. And so it's not scary to me. It doesn't hurt my feelings. I want to learn from it, and then I want to engage in communication, because I think I got the chops. I don't think if you think I'm full of crap, that that's true, and I want to tell you why. And I just have a lot of respect for other people's opinions, and I think that saves me quite a bit.
Right, I've talked about how on the left side of my bookcase, I've got self-improvement books from the early part of my career. And a lot of them will say that you've got to go through mantras, that before you do something big like going on Conan or a big TV show, you've got to work on yourself and go through your confidence. You don't do any of it.
DNA. What I won't do is go write a book in front of everybody watching me because I don't have the skill set. So to me, all those books that you just read on your shelf are full of shit. What it's about is this: who the hell are you? You know who you are. You may be embarrassed of it. It may not be as good as you had hoped. But if you embrace who you are, all of what you are, and you really focus on what you're awesome at, your life can be phenomenal. And that's what I'm good at. I suck at so many things. It's probably ridiculous. But I'm good at a couple things. And I'm really great at storytelling and branding and selling and you know, biz dev. And so, you know, I think it's really about getting to know who you are. Too many people want to be something they're not or want to be like. That's not something I have a problem with, and it's something that I push the world to open their mind to, especially a world where you can, at no cost, build a business around your passion on the internet by blogging, video, audio, written word. And to me, that's the crux of what I believe in. And the fact that you can make $50,000 a year. AJ and I met somebody the other day. They make $48,000 a year on banner ads around this baseball product they have. Do you know how many people are watching this who don't make $48,000 a year? Or even another thing, how many people make $40,000 a year working their ass off and aren't that happy, who can go home and talk about their biggest passion, whether it's Star Trek or gardening or Taekwondo or marbles, and make money and be happy? That's what I'm passionate about, spreading that message, showing people how to do it, and living that example.
Right now we've talked about all the big successes, blowing up. Can you talk about a failure? Have you had a big failure in business that you can open up about?
So this is where I really hate these kind of interviews for this point, because when I tell you I don't have one, it's not true. It's just I'm not capable of processing them. I've never had a big failure that's so obvious on paper. I've never lost a lot of money. So, but I've probably made this. I mean, listen, turning down television offers is probably a big failure, right? If, you know, if 100,000 people are willing to watch me on the internet, then I could be a big, big star right now. And though I may not like the TV contract and not believe in it, the platform would have positioned me to be in a different place. I could probably sign a 10-year deal with a soda to replicate. I mean, so the things I've said no to are probably my mistakes, but because I didn't get to see them because there's no machine out there to show me what would have happened, I don't know what they are.
You talked about charisma earlier. I read in, I think it was the New Yorker, where you said that you met your wife on J-Date. I would have thought that you'd have girls swarming you, especially a guy who knows wine, who knows how to talk, who's got people surrounding him.
Yep.
Why J-Date?
Couple things. In that point of my life, I was working so many retail hours and living in Jersey that I had no energy whatsoever to go out, right? And so J-Date just expedited it, right? I mean, it would have been Facebook, or it would have been Twitter. Or, I mean, obviously, it would have been very different if I wasn't married when I started Wine Library TV and started getting a little internet fame. I would have gotten some, you know, email. It could have been really, you know, I missed out on definitely an interesting chapter opportunity in my life. It was scale. I mean, I met girls at Wine Library and dated some of them and things of that nature. It was just I wanted to, you know, meet girls. And this allowed me to scale it much easier. So, you know, it just happened to be J-Date. I mean, I was on Match.com as well before that. Like, I mean, it was whatever whatever. You know, when you're working as many hours as I did, which was back then 7 to 11 p.m., and you're working retail, you're not sitting in front of your computer. You're walking around. You're beat. And this was a lot of pressure. That was a lot of pressure. I was taking over family business. So it was just a scale game, really, for me. It was just really expedited the opportunity to meet people.
How do you balance it, actually? A lot of people are watching this. They're hearing you answer emails for hours a day. You're doing the show. You're answering your comments. You're posting comments everywhere else. And you got a wife who you talk about. You talk about your love for your family and your wife. You want to be there for her. How do you find the time for it? How do people who are watching us, who are trying to learn from you, do that?
I do what's best for me, right? I AJ often says to me, I'm a robot, right? I don't eat, especially if AJ and I are doing something cool, like a project or a new product. You know, VaynerMedia, we're building out a lot of assets. We're consulting, but we're creating some properties. We're gonna have a lot of fun things to talk about in the future. I'm just willing, I just have DNA that is so focused and pumped, and luckily health-wise doesn't need water or food. So I think I scale as a human better than most people, even though humans can only scale to some level. And on top of that, I'm just very aware. I have enormous pulse. When I feel like Lizzie needs time, I create time. Plus, I'm getting more structured in my old age. You know, now that we have Misha, you know, Sunday mornings, walk in the park. You know, I'm trying to get a little more structured. Mondays are going to be all meetings because I'm refocusing on corked.com. Just hired an amazing developer and a CEO. So it's going to be another project that's on my ass. So, I've got a lot of stuff going on. I do the best I can. I don't do anything that I don't love. I'll always watch the Jets. If I'm in the mood to watch boxing, I'm going to watch it. If I need to play something like tennis or do something, ping pong, I'll do. Listen, the middle of the day yesterday at VaynerMedia, and I'm freaking focused McGee. I, grabbed Sam, one of the guys, and we played ping pong because we were both talking a little trash. He beat me, by the way, which is devastating. Very devastating. So luckily it's preseason now. But I branded it as preseason after I lost. So I scratch my itch, Andrew, at all times. Luckily for me, the itch is I want to work a lot. Because I really am good, and I love it, and I've got a lot of skill in it, and I think I can be really big, and I feel like that's a sense of responsibility I have for myself to capitalize on this outrageous luck of DNA that I was gifted, because that's what it is, period.
Well, usually I read out the Twitter messages that come in as we're doing the interview, but I can't keep up with this. People are just firing them away. They're coming up faster than I can even read them. Thank you, guys. I'm sorry I can't read all the names, but I'm reading them, and I'm grateful to you guys for participating. Matt Mikowitz, founder of SitePoint 99 Designs and now Flippa, emailed. You know the guy, right? And his stuff.
Yeah, man. That's a great example. Like, I met him at like a Dig meetup or a Wine 2.0 or something. And I was like, dude, I love your site. And he was like all like pumped, and I was like, what are you talking about? Like, that site was so big to me when nobody knew who I was. AJ and I lived in that site in the early days when one of my great concepts early on was I wanted to create a website every day, and I wanted the website to make a dollar a day. You're just like, I'm very in the trenches. And so, I don't know, I think he's a good dude. So go ahead, what were you going
to
say?
So he wanted to know, why were you turning down all these TV offers? We were wondering back and forth in emails, are they big TV offers? Are you holding out for something bigger than you're getting now?
I'm holding out for bigger, and I'm holding out for better deals. I don't want XYZ cable channel to own every time I poop.
We're talking about the Food Network, which owns all the content on there.
We're not talking about the Food Network in this scenario, but we're talking about a different network that, it's a 5-year deal and they own everything. And that's just not me. I'm not an actor. I'm an entrepreneur. It's not a good deal, so I won't do it. I don't need to become a celebrity. I've got a wife and a kid, so I can't parlay it to like get chicks, and I just don't need it. And more importantly, I don't believe that's how it's being built anymore. I've got some celebrity status, not a lot, but triple Z list, and I built it through the internet. So, and I think that will continue to happen more and more.
All right, how do you grow it now to a $1 billion business from here?
I think VaynerMedia will have a lot to say in that. We're doing a lot of angel investing with our sweat equity, getting a lot of clients, which is turning into a lot of liquid if I invest that money properly. There's just no doubt in my mind I'm gonna do it. I just don't know exactly how. You know, VaynerMedia could have something crazy happen. AJ and I could have a situation where we look a lot like Tony from Zappos, right? Where some product comes along that's so amazing and we believe in it so much and we think it's going to be $1 trillion that we say, oh crap, let's just put all our energy into this. So I don't know. I don't know, but I know it's going to happen just because I know what's going to happen.
At what point did you start getting pieces of companies in exchange for helping them out?
Probably 2 years, a year and a half ago, started getting a lot of offers for advisory boards. And, you know, those are 0.000s, you know. But now with VaynerMedia, we're getting a lot of companies where we can get into double-digit equity ownership in return for, because listen, we're charging $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 a month retainers for our consultancy. So it's expensive. So, we, you know, companies can definitely benefit from what we bring to the table, and it's giving us a lot of opportunity to get equity if we believe enough in the product.
What kind of consulting are you doing? You're helping people get on social media? You're helping companies?
The last thing we are is a social media consultancy company. You know, I mean, having a Twitter account or a Facebook account as a business person or any entity in the world today is like telling somebody, we highly recommend that you breathe oxygen. You know, it's a necessity. What we're good at is storytelling, branding, helping with the product. We're very stickle on, you know, sticklers on UI. Your website's got to be right. Your show's got to be right. Because once we send all the traffic over, you need to be able to capture. So a lot of business strategy, helping implement video plays, web plays, connecting them to the right characters. Just the brain power of navigating through the world we live in. A lot of people don't get it.
Do you own a piece of Twitter?
I am, and that I have equity in Twitter.
And that is that one of the deals where you helped out and in
return
you invested?
I invested.
Can you? I don't want to get into the details of the investments that are private. But can you tell me about how you started and what you helped out? How you started?
No,
not with Twitter.
I have no impact on Twitter's DNA. I was fortunate enough to get stock from somebody who had stock, and that's it. I just was smart enough to look for it a couple years ago, but I have no impact whatsoever on any. I'd love to sit here and say I did, and I'm sure I will with companies of that scale eventually, but not in this scenario.
But it seems like that's a part of the package. Speaking is a part of the package. It helps you grow your brand, helps you bring in revenue. Not huge, but it does, right?
Yes.
Taking shares in businesses. Can you tell me about how that started? Can you give us an example of a company, even if you don't mention the name?
I'll be there in a little bit.
Yeah.
People, you know, this is what I believe in. This is what I consult for every company. I think this is how you get businesses to work. It's how you get girls. You know, the other way I got girls is never asking to get girls. And I think that's how you get play. You let it come to you. And so it's about putting out good stuff, whatever that means. I started getting pieces of equity because people started emailing me and saying, you really get this. We need to figure out that you're a wine guy and you get this better than our $400 million company or my startup in the tech space. Like, why do you understand Twitter and Facebook better than I do? I'm a developer, or I'm a web guy or this and that. Because this is social, this is about human interaction and that's what I'm good at. And so it just came to me. How did I start happening? My inbox started getting things like this. Hey, we'll give you $10,000 to come and speak at our conference. I would do the amazing business move of writing back, okay. You know, so it came. It came because I didn't go looking for it and I focused on what was most important, which was building my brand. And the way I built my brand was by caring about the user of whatever product they were consuming, whether that was Wine Library TV or GaryVaynerchuk.com business stuff. Whatever they were consuming, I cared and got involved.
Guys, if you have any questions, post them up on Twitter right now on Mixergy.com, and I'll ask Gary. Gary, my next question for you is: how methodical are you about things like Vayniacs? Vayniacs are people who are fans of yours. It's a name that you gave them on your show at one point, and it's stuck and it's grown. Is that methodical? Do you sit around and say, "I need to give this community a name, or else it's not really going to be a community"?
I do and I don't. That was, you know, that was speared up through conversation from the forum. The Vayniac name comes from a forum member. You know, they came up with a bunch of, you know, there was the wine librarians and there was the Gary heads and there was all that stuff, right? I'm very good at paying attention. I don't do a whole lot of strategy, like in month six, I'm going to do this. And in month nine, I mean, I have a lot of natural entrepreneurial DNA. So I think about those things, but they're cheesy when they're force-fed. I let them happen naturally, but the second I taste it, it's like a shark, right? I may not go after you if you put no blood in the water, but you better not put a drop of blood in there because then I'm coming. So I would say it's shark-like. I'm a shark. You know what I mean? But I mean it. I mean, that in that instinct, you know, that's what it is. If somebody puts blood in the water, just a drop, a pellet, a little nick, a paper cut, I'm going to pay attention to it. I'm going to address it. And if I think there's more opportunity to eat that whole person, I'll do it.
The forums seem to be a big source of ideas and innovation for you. At what point did you put it?
Early on when there was less Twitter and Facebook, but those things have definitely eaten in. Those platforms have been eaten into that because now people are everywhere. It's not you don't bring them to your house. It's like you got to pay attention to them everywhere. And so I pay attention to them everywhere. I think one of the big misplays by a lot of companies is they don't have a high five or a Bebo or an Orkut initiative. I'm starting to do a lot of homework in those places.
What do you mean?
Just a little FYI.
Those are platforms
that have a lot of freaking users, and nobody talks about them.
I'm sorry, we were getting cut off. You're saying that there are sites out there that have a lot of users and people aren't talking about them.
Yeah.
People in the media aren't talking about them, and they need more attention that way, or what?
People. Business people are trying to figure out every ounce of soul how to engage people that use Twitter and Facebook. Meanwhile, there's... You're competing against all the other Jedi, meanwhile, or the other fishermen. Meanwhile, there's a big-ass pond over here called High Five or Orkut or Bebo that if you really started paying attention to and listen to, could create a lot of opportunity. I don't even know what I'm talking about right now. This is just my new intuition that I'm going to go and do that. And I think I'm going to find a lot of good, delicious things, like berries and granola. It's going to be yummy.
I got to ask a tactical question here. How are you getting through 1,000 emails a day? I get 100, 150. I can't get through them. Are you just giving them quick answers? What are you doing?
I'm not doing it as much anymore. My newest video, if you email me now, does say I may not get back to you. So I had to kind of retire with Misha being born because what I did was I stayed up to 3 o'clock in the morning. That's what I did. How am I getting through them, Andrew? I spent 17 hours a day. Pumped up a show, and I did email.
All right. Let's have a look here. Dude, you watch my show, right? You watch the interviews that I've done here?
Me personally?
Yes. Or do you know what I'm doing here at Mixer G?
So let me, because I don't want to hurt your feelings, and I'm going to say this on the most global scale. I obviously saw part of what you did with AJ. I consume no media. Zero. I don't watch anything. I don't read any blogs, I mean, which is bad, by the way. I very much have a sense of what you do, but to say that I've been watching the episodes, I have not.
I was hoping for a great testimonial, but but for someone who's doing this, today, what do you do to get more people to come on? Is it just going out and commenting?
Well, listen, I'll be honest with you. I think you're doing some smart things. I mean, I always think that if you're trying to book guests, you leverage prior guests. I'm sure that if anybody gives a crap about who I am, in that little niche of the world or that little circle, the fact that you can say Gary was on the show is probably going to help you get more guests. And then it goes on and on and on. So I think for booking guests, it's always about the get, right? And if I were you, I would go to the most famous people you think are touchable. You know, I would say somebody like a Cuban. You know, he's kind of accessible for somebody that crosses over. I would create as many crossover opportunities as possible. Guys like me and Kevin Rose and I, Justine and Brogan, and da, 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 we're all in that same circle. Try to find people that step out just a hair from that circle and keep leveraging a little bit more. So kind of like Ashton Kutcher would be a smart get because that opens up a different world, a song, you know, somebody in the music industry. I would go out to niches that bring you to other niches, but it's all about the get for you right now, right? The hustle of... You know, for you to get the people that you want, you have to get somebody and then leverage that brand. I mean, that's the smart way to do it. I mean, that's how people do it. Now, if you want average Joe, it's easy. You just go into Twitter and say, who wants to be on? You know? But you know what? I honestly think that average Joe is underrated because I was average Joe. Nobody gave a shit about me in Silicon Valley in 2006, February. So I'm very interested. It's my book outreach right now, me mailing so many bloggers. I don't give a shit if you're 49 million on Alexa. You may have something amazing to say, and I want to spend 5 minutes on Instant Messenger with you and brainstorm. So I just think it's a mixture of the extreme, which is try to get the biggest stars possible, but not underestimating the lowest equity. And that's kind of where I am. I'm really an extreme player that way. I want to go for the biggest things. You know, I want everything in the world to be the greatest of all time, greatest businessman of all time, but I can live with nothing.
You talked earlier about getting Technorati, about how you went and you threw a wine tasting for them. Can you tell us about other ways that you got to know some of the big people in the industry, guys like Kevin Rose, guys like some of the others that you mentioned earlier?
I went to tech conferences and shook people's hands.
Just going out there and shaking their hands.
Yep.
And throwing parties like the one that you did at South by Southwest.
Yep. And that's because I worked my ass off to have a wine company that gave me an asset to leverage, right?
Right.
So, right. You know, it's kind of one of those things. But the handshaking was much more powerful than giving away free wine. You can't buy friends, right? You can't buy people caring. I mean, you can create commotion, and if you've got the chops and then that brings people to you, then it's a great deal. But it's about being a real dude and a real chick and a real person, whatever, you know. You have to be good. I mean, you have to be good, and everybody's good at something enough to monetize. It just, I don't think people embrace what they're good at.
So Parker's asking, when did you know what your best skill was? When did you know what you were good at?
I always did it, you know, selling, branding, but I never wrapped my head around it until the last couple years, right? But I always did it. I was always good at branding, storytelling. Dad, we can't be Shoppers Discount Liquors. We've got to be VaynerMedia. What's a 315? It's an in now? I can make that a 330. Wait, Angela, are we wrapping up?
Yes, let's ask this question. You talk about legacy a lot. Actually, two questions. So far, what's the proudest achievement?
Well, I mean, definitely Misha, my baby. You know.
How about professionally?
But if we're doing professionally, the fact that I believe truly there are some people out there that think I'm going to be one of the biggest businessmen of all time and I'm going to buy the Jets, that's flattering as fuck. I mean, the fact that people think I can pull this off, this is not small. We're talking billions. Not everybody makes billions. So that's flattering. I don't know if they do that because they like me, but for the couple that believe me because they've seen what I've done and they believe that I've got the chops to do it, that's massively flattering.
All right, and legacy, you talk about that a lot. What are you planning to leave?
This interview is part of it. I'm going to work really hard to put out lots of content. I know my big up to my great, great, great grandchildren right now. I love you, Tommy. You know, it's living the life that I love that a lot of people after they have drinks with me say, wow, you really care about bigger things than I thought. Because I talk so much about buying the Jets. So that paints maybe a picture of material things. It's just what I want professionally. So that's it. I want to leave a legacy of like, you know, somebody said something really smart to me the other day. I'll leave you with this. He said, there's two ways to build a big building. Build the biggest building or tear down the ones around you. And I am the most anti-tear down the ones around you person of all time. And I'm going to try to build the biggest building by just building the biggest building.
All right. Great place to leave it. Thank you. Thanks for doing the interview.
Thanks so much, man. Take care. Great job. Great interview.
And there it is. So now that it's over, what'd you think? What'd you think of the interview? What'd you think of the ideas we talked about? What did you think of the stories that we told? Is this helpful? Will this help you build a better company? Tell me. Come back to MixerG.com in the comments. Give me your feedback. The more feedback I get from you, the more helpful I can be to you. Also, now that you know my mission here, to be like a modern-day Napoleon Hill who talked to the most successful people of his time and brought back their stories to upstarts and Forbes magazine, which has done that. Now that you know my mission, what can I do to do it better? What can I do to help you with this mission better? Who else can I interview? Come back to MixerG. I've got tons of ways for you to connect with me. Let me know how I can do that, and I'm always listening to that. Second, check out Gary Vaynerchuk's sites. I'll have links to them all over MixerG. In fact, all over the post here where you got this interview so that you could link over to him. And click around MixerG. I've got interviews with tons of entrepreneurs, tons of people in business, tons of people who actually day in and day out do what they come here to MixerG to teach you to do. I don't want people who are just professional teachers. I want to talk to people who are out there every day doing to step away for a minute and talk to us about how they did it. Talk to us about how they achieved. What is it? Forbes magazine used to say that they're a magazine about doers and doing. I think that's what this needs to be here on MixerG. interviews, conversations, education from people who are out there doing every day for you so that you can learn from their success and build your own. Thank you for watching. I'm Andrew Warner. I'll see you in the comments.